broadcasting in HD radio at 88.9 FM. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, and KBDH San Ardo. Streaming live and podcasting at KUSP.org. Hey everybody, I'm Gary Shapiro, and it's time for From the Bookshelf.
This week, we welcome Bob Spitz back to the show. A couple of years ago, Bob Spitz wrote the definitive biography of the Beatles. Written with the cooperation of the Beatles and hundreds of people involved with their story, the Beatles told their story in detail as never before. The book became a bestseller due in no small part to Bob's appearance here on the show. And it was also a New York Times Notable Book of the Year for 2004. And now Bob Spitz has written a new Beatles book aimed at a younger audience. The book is called Yeah, 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 The Beatles, Beatlemania, and the Music That Changed the World. Bob Spitz, welcome back to From the Bookshelf.
It's great to be back, Gary.
Before we talk about your new book, I want to get an update on your last book, which is now in paperback. What kind of reaction did you get when you told the story of the Beatles unexpurgated? Did you hear from any of the principals, first of all? What about?
I did, actually. You know, I heard from Paul McCartney shortly after the book came out. It kind of caught him by surprise. He was here in the States doing, I guess, one of his last tours, and he was on a plane, and he opened up the back page of the New York Times, and there was a full-page ad for the book. And so he actually went out and read it. Which I found to be quite amusing. And a few weeks later, I got called to Lee Eastman's office, which his father-in-law, and I thought, well, this is an ambush, you know. But they assured me it wasn't. Paul was really touched by the book and thought that it was one of the first complete tellings of the Beatles story and one that really revealed new information to him, especially about his mother's death, which touched him completely. So I was incredibly happy about that, and I've heard through other people that Yoko did not hate me.
Well, that's great. I mean, those are two people that last time we spoke, you know, you were a little worried about. I mean, you were sure that Paul would not like the book. So.
I was sure that he wouldn't like the book. In fact, I believe I told you, at the time I thought that Paul might be the villain of the Beatles story.
Yeah.
And yet, from what I heard, he thought that I really told the story the way it happened. And I think most of the reviews felt the same thing, that I didn't bring any prejudices to the story. I let the story tell itself. And I think McCartney appreciated that because so many books have been written where the writers of the Beatle legend interposed themselves in the story. And, of course, that's unforgivable as far as a biographer is concerned.
Yeah, and one of the things we talked about last time, and I think it's kind of an endless Beatle issue, is that people are either John people or Paul people. It's hard for people to be both.
It's true. I had to be very careful about that, of course, when I wrote the book, because at times I was a Paul person, at times I was a John person. And then, of course, you know, at the end I was really just a Ringo person. But I think, really, you can't tell the Beatles story without realizing the contribution, the equal contribution from both of those men, John and Paul, and how much they played off each other, which gave us that wonderful Beatles catalog.
How about Beatle fans? How did they react to the book?
You know, it was mixed, actually. The people who wanted to read about the Beatles story, who didn't know it by heart, who read the reviews and went out and bought the book, were just wonderful. I made the decision early on that I was going to put my email address in the back flap of the book because I wanted to hear from people who read it. And it was perhaps one of the best decisions I've ever made as a writer because I heard from all sides. The people, as I said, who weren't familiar with the story were really touched by it and really loved it. There were many people who said they had read everything about the Beatles, all those books, and were tired of the story, were given my book, let it sit on their nightstand for, you know, 6 months, then picked it up and couldn't put it down. And those were the people. And I got a lot of those. I was surprised. And then there were the Beatle experts, the people who are the trickies of the Beatle planet.
Yeah.
And they hate my guts.
What is it that, you know, that they didn't like?
Well, they've bought the story that was told to Hunter Davies in 1967. The one in which I believe I told you last time was half made up by the Beatles just because they wanted to protect their families and their friends from some of the darker part of the Beatle legend. And, you know, I corrected the dates. I corrected facts from that book, all the mistakes. And they were not happy with that. It was a sacrilege to those people. And I heard from them. I heard from them often. In fact, at one point, they had jammed the Amazon book site so that you couldn't purchase my book. Lovely people, though they be.
They were trying to protect their Beatles from your harsh reality?
You know, they didn't want an interloper telling a new story. And I thought that my story was even-handed, but they weren't interested in an even-handed story. There was a myth to protect, and they wanted to protect it, and I didn't do that. I didn't tell an off-color story, but I told a story that they weren't familiar with, and it offended them. Some of them have come over to my side, and some of them continue to you know, list me on the same list with Dick Cheney. what can you do, you know? And now I'm sure with this new book they're out to get me again.
But not your friend Albert Goldman. They didn't put you in that category.
Well, you know, Albert's been dead a long time.
Yeah.
And yes, they haven't placed me in that realm with Albert. He has a special place. He is the Dick Cheney of the Beatles world.
Yeah. So you're just a runner-up.
Yes, I'm the runner-up. Although I hope not. You know, there were so many people who were really touched by this story, and I continue to hear from them today. In the beginning, I would get 35 and 40 letters from people a day, and I'm still hearing from them 2 years later, different people. So I think it's not me that they're particularly interested in talking to, but most of the people want to tell their own story of how the Beatles affected them when they first heard them, when they were kids. And it's an important part of all of our backgrounds, whether you're 55 years old or 40 years old or, believe it or not, 8 years old. Mm-hmm. And I think that they really need an outlet to express themselves. So for the time being, I'm it.
Well, that leads us right into the discussion of your new book. We're talking with Bob Spitz, Beatle biographer. So you wrote a million-page book about the Beatles, but that wasn't enough. So now you've written a new Beatle book, and it's called Yeah, Yeah, Yeah. The Beatles, Beatlemania, and the Music That Changed the World.
Right.
And it's a book aimed at a younger audience from 11 to 18, would you say?
Actually, it's much younger than that.
So what do you say?
It's aimed at an audience from anywhere from 6 to 12 years old.
6 to 12 years old. So it's a preteen book.
It is. I guess Little Brown calls it a book for young readers, what we used to call a young adult book.
Uh-huh.
And I thought it was really interesting that that there were a lot of young kids today who bought that Beatles number one CD when it came out.
Right.
For many kids, it was the first thing they heard. Instead of hearing Raffi or Tom Chapin, their parents put Beatles number one on for them, and that was their entree into pop music.
Well, you know, it does seem, and even long before that CD was released and continues to happen today, it seems like that kids are just born with the Beatles songs in their genetic memories.
Exactly right. Well, you know, they're such joyous songs, and they have those great riffs that you can repeat over and over again. And even if you're six and you sing, you know, I love you, she loves you, yeah, 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 and you don't understand the context, it has a lyric that, you know, you kind of know what it means without knowing what it means.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, my daughter came home from school, and she, at the time she was 11 years old, and her assignment was to read a biography. And I said, well, why don't you read a biography of the Beatles? So she looked around for one, and there wasn't one. And I thought, well, that's outrageous. You know, she knew the Beatles' music. Why shouldn't she know the story? So once I finished that, you know, monster piece that I had written, I thought that there was a real good opportunity here for a book that not only parents could read their version of, but young people could read their version of. And it gave them something to talk about. You know, something the parents had their story about the Beatles, the kids have theirs. So it's in a way, it's sex, drugs, and rock and roll without the sex and the drugs.
Right. I was going to ask you about that. I mean, you can tell the story of the Beatles without the sex, but it's pretty hard to tell the story of the Beatles without the drugs. And
yeah.
Your book does mention LSD for a couple of paragraphs.
It does. You know, we decided when I decided to write it, I felt that I could tiptoe around them smoking dope, but I didn't know what to do with them being dosed by acid. And, there was a real moral decision to be made. And when I took it to my publisher, and believe me, they are extremely conservative people and nervous about being hung out in the media, they were adamant that I hit the LSD head on. And I really credit them for that. I think it was important not to shrink away from it. This is what happened. You know, the guys took LSD and they wrote all those fabulous songs, but they found out later on in life that LSD was screwing up their lives and they stopped doing it, except for John.
Right. Well, I was going to ask you if you had wanted to say more and the publishers had stopped you, or did you say exactly what you
No, I said exactly what I thought we needed to say, and not a word more, and nor did they ask for more or for less. A couple of paragraphs, a couple of pages about it, I thought was great. I didn't really feel that a kid who was 8 years old needed to know about Timothy Leary and
right.
and all the background of you know, Owsley producing acid in his lab and John taking it 6 or 7 times a day.
Well, I guess, you know, when they're old enough, they can read The Beatles.
Exactly
by Bob
right.
Spitz, and then they'll hear the whole story.
Oh, they'll hear the whole story on the street long before they read my book.
You say the book is intended for very young children, but you do use a pretty adult vocabulary. At one point, you quote one of the Beatles, I think it was, as saying it was frighteningly chaotic, the aspects of Beatlemania, which I think that's probably some pretty advanced vocabulary there. I don't know.
Yeah, no, you're right. You know, I'd never written a children's book before. And I guess my first swing at it was very standoffish. It almost looked like, you know, Dick and Jane talk about the Beatles. And I knew that was completely inappropriate. And I decided, no, you know what, I'm going to take the language right out of my book, which I did almost all the way through, and decided not to talk down to the kids. And I think you can tell kids that something was chaotic, and even if they're not sure what it is, the sound of it and the context will really lay it out for them. I did edit a lot of the sentences, and even yesterday when I did a reading, it was the first time I've done it for kids, and about a dozen kids showed up, and I was surprised. They weren't 8 or 12, they were 6. And I looked through the portion of the book that I was reading, which was when the Beatles first arrive in New York, which is a lovely little episode. But as I was reading it, I looked at these kids and I thought, they have no freaking idea what I'm talking about. So I basically shrunk back from the book and told the story myself.
Instead of doing a reading.
I did a reading, but I changed all the words as it was coming out. The amazing thing was afterwards, their questions knocked me for a loop. The first kid, and really he was, I didn't even know he could talk. That's how young he was. He raised his little hand and he said, "Can you tell me the different personalities of the Beatles?" Wonderful question.
Yeah.
So you know, I don't know. Maybe I underestimated the kids. I hope not. But I think it was really important that we didn't talk down to them, and so I did try to use the same language as the book. And in fact, if you go to the Amazon site, and there's nowhere on the book does it say it's a book for young adults or young readers,
right?
Which I think is a big mistake, but there are only a couple reviews on the Amazon site, and one of them, believe it or not, says, this is a great book, and the great thing about it is he made it in big type for baby boomers.
For us old, us old folks.
Exactly,
well,
right.
You know, it does have one thing that the Beatles didn't have, which is like just so many beautiful big pictures. It has some just gorgeous pictures.
Yeah.
And it made me think, gosh, I wish Bob would do an illustrated edition of his previous book, which would, I guess, weigh 3,000 pounds if you did it. But
it probably would. You know, I'll tell you, if you want a book like that, the best book that anyone can pick up is that gorgeous anthology that the Beatles put out a couple of years ago.
Right, yeah.
It's a stunning book. Again, it's only about half accurate. You have to go to my book for the real story. But the pictures are fantastic, and they really tell the story. I will tell you, this is probably the last time I will swing by your station and talk about a new Beatles book of mine. I've done it.
Yeah, you're done?
Well, I think so.
I was going to ask you this. Now that you've written about the Beatles and you've been working with the Beatles for years, do you still listen to the Beatles?
Well, you know, it's impossible not to listen to the Beatles. That's what I've found out. I thought it would be easy to put them out of my life. And at one point, boy, that's all I wanted. You know, after 8.5 years of working on the book and 2 years of promoting it, I had gotten to a point, and I thought that if I never hear another Beatles song again, it would be too soon. And so for about 2 months, I didn't let it into the house. I forbid anybody from putting it on if I went to a party. But, you know, if you go to the supermarket, there's Beatles music on. And if you leave the supermarket and you go to the post office, there's Beatles music on. And if you leave the post office and put your car radio on, there's Beatles music on. And I couldn't get away from it. And yesterday when I walked into that reading, they were playing, oh boy, now it escapes me, but it was an early Beatles song. And there were those gorgeous harmonies of John and Paul singing something slow and sultry. And I watched the kids' faces as they came in, and I listened to the music again. Oh, it was here, there, and everywhere.
Mm.
And I thought, you know, this is what the Beatles are all about. This is why they are great. They are undeniable. I said before, the music is joyous. You don't have to get away from the Beatles music. It's that good, and it's happy to listen to. It's complex. There's something for everybody. And it will, you know, outlive us all.
Yeah. No, absolutely. In fact, now the
Beatles... simple answer is no.
Yeah, good. Now the Beatles have sort of... there's been sort of some sacrilegious adaptations of the Beatles, and I want to ask you about both of them. The first one is Love, which is the Cirque du Soleil show in Las Vegas, which I don't know if you've seen the show or not.
But I haven't, but I've heard the...
But I'm sure you've heard the CD. And what did you think of the CD?
Well, you know, I was kind of appalled by it. And I think I'm one of the few people who would say that. A lot of my friends... heard it and loved it. My daughter bought me the CD for one of the holidays, and I thought it was an abomination. I really did. One of the things that the Beatles never did was let anybody else screw with their music. And I was surprised that George Martin did it. It wasn't a Beatles album. It was a George Martin and his son album, and it was a disco album for me. I don't think the Beatles need corrupting. Is the show good? The show could be great. I have no idea. You know, I mean, if there's a show someplace and Beatles music is fueling it, then perhaps it's a good thing. But I listened to it once and I put it away.
How about Across the Universe? Have you seen it?
And I'm ashamed to tell you I haven't seen it yet. But everyone I know who's seen it told me not to prejudge it, that they... Everyone, 100% across the board, liked the show.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, good. Next time we'll
yeah, I'll
talk
get
about
there.
That.
I'll get there. You know, when I heard that it's about a girl named Lucy and a guy named Jude, I just wanted to crawl into a hole someplace.
It does on paper sound like a horrible idea, but
it does.
When you see the film, you might have a different
idea. Yeah, no, that's what everyone says. I'm looking forward to it.
You know, one of the things I was pleased to say about your book, to see about your new book, Yeah, is that you left out the name of the man whose name we should never mention, the man who killed John Lennon.
Right.
Although the book does have kind of an epilogue that tells us, you know, kind of brings us up to date with the story of the Beatles.
But I don't believe I mention it in the adult book either, do I?
No, But I think there's less of an epilogue in that book, isn't there?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because it's just the story of the Beatles, whereas this one is... It's still just the story of the Beatles, but I can see the need for that kids would want to know more at the end.
Yeah.
So how did you decide to leave that name out?
The simple answer is that my book is about the Beatles, and the Beatles ended in 1970. That's a cop-out, I know, because two of the Beatles' lives are ended, and I think it's fair to talk about it. Yesterday, in that reading with the young kids, I kind of had to confront it, because they asked me right away, how did I feel when I heard that John was dead? And, you know, it's a question that everyone will ask, and everyone has an answer for, their own personal answer.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, I felt that the book itself was a story to celebrate the band. And I didn't want it to have an unhappy ending. It's unhappy enough that they decided to break up, and yet I think I've been able to put a pretty good spin on that. I think the Beatles... You know, we're together 10 years. They did amazing stuff together. They were friends almost all the way through it. They survived it. And then they grew apart. They grew up and they grew apart. But no one died. And I felt that was a story that someone else could tell. In fact, two friends of mine are in the process. One is in the process of writing a John Lennon biography, much needed, and someone else is writing a biography of Paul, less needed, and they will deal with those endings, but I didn't think that the kids needed that in a book that was just about the Beatles and their music.
We're talking with Bob Spitz, and he's the biographer of the Beatles that came out in 2004, and his new book, which is called Yeah, 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 The Beatles, Beatlemania, and the Music That Changed the World, a book for young people, young readers. I think there are some young people who are also young readers, and that's an incredible thing.
I hope so.
Yeah, a lot of kids don't read, of course, nowadays.
They read Harry Potter, I guess.
Yeah. Yes. Bob Spitz has also written about Bob Dylan and other things. And I wonder, do you think it'd be possible to write a book about Bob Dylan that kids would read?
You know, we're actually dealing with that right now. We're dealing with two ideas. Number one is my Dylan book, and number two is an earlier book called Barefoot in Babylon that I had written, which is about the Woodstock Music Festival, and which is about teenagers in a way. And of course, we're headed to the 40th anniversary, believe it or not, of that.
Right.
So we're talking about Barefoot, and we're talking about Dylan. Dylan is a book that a lot of publishers have asked me to consider for young readers. And I wonder really how they will associate with it. I mean, there's a lot of incredible music for them, but I don't know at what age you latch on to the Dylan catalog. I was...
Yeah, it's not something that you listen to when you're five.
No, but believe it or not, you know, I moved to to Dylan when I was 13. In fact, I rejected the Beatles as imposters and cheesy wannabes because I was a Bob Dylan fan.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know...
And you got beat up for it.
And I got beaten up, yeah, very famous story. But I think it might be harder, although, you know, there was a book out 2 years ago which prompted this book on the Beatles called Woody Guthrie.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was called This Land Is Your Land. It was a young reader's book, and it won all the awards. It was beautifully written. And also dealt with, you know, Woody's involvement with the Weavers and communism and strikes and everything else. And a lot of kids read that book. So perhaps they might read a book about Dylan in the context, perhaps maybe not about his music, but about how he... brought a sense of intellect to popular music and how he changed the culture in that direction. I don't know. I'm toying with it now, and I would really have to clean up the language in my Dylan biography first.
Well, that makes me think that maybe, you know, many years have gone by. Maybe you are thinking of revising your Dylan book.
Wow, what I wouldn't give for that. And if I had a brain in my head, I would have done it before I sent the manuscript to the publisher originally. I won't bore you with the bloody facts, but Greil Marcus had written a review of it in the on the front page of the Washington Post Book World that began, "This is a brilliant book, and this is an obnoxious book." And so I immediately declared him an idiot and put the review away, and then a couple years later got it out and looked at it, and I thought, wow, was he right? It taught me a lesson about writing and keeping yourself out of the story and not trying to be hip. All the information is in that book, the whole story about Dylan's life, just the way I had written the story about the Beatles. But at the time I was very young, and I thought perhaps I had to be write it as if, you know, I were a hip journalist and imposed myself on the story, not quite like Edmund Morris, but in other ways. And I think it just intruded. So, yes, I would love to have another swing.
Well, now that the Beatles has given you the historian's credentials, you should.
Well, perhaps, but Dylan remains for me the gold standard.
Mm-hmm.
The Beatles, of course, in one direction, but Dylan... When I was done writing Dylan, and that book took 5 years, I still couldn't get enough of his music and could even hear Blown in the Wind, having listened to it for 5 years running, and heard it a different way with different inflections at the end of the writing. So, again, the short answer is yes, I would love a crack at that.
So where are you going to go next, Bob? You're going to write another children's book, or what?
I have a book that's coming out in April called The Saucier's Apprentice, published by Norton. It's about a guy who finished an 8.5-year book project, turned 50, finished a 14-year marriage, had his heart broken in two, wound up with custody of an 11-year-old daughter, and did what anybody in that situation would do. He ran away to 16 of the best cooking schools in France and Italy to learn how to cook. So it's a memoir about my experience doing that.
Well, that sounds fantastic, and I hope you'll stop back here on From the Bookshelf and talk about that when it's ready.
I'd love to, and now I will tell you just shortly, I am George Steinbrenner's biographer.
Really?
So I'm involved deeply in that right now, and that will be the next...
When will we see that book?
Maybe 4 years. It's going to be as complex and heavily researched as the Beatles, although I think it'll take me much less time because the people are much more forthcoming about talking about him.
And is he participating?
Yes. To the extent that he's able to, yes. But they are cooperating in every way, and they've allowed me to talk to everybody who's never before talked to the press about the Steinbrenner years with the Yankees.
You don't think he'll fire you in the middle of the...
it doesn't matter. In this case, it doesn't matter.
Well, Bob Spitz, thank you so much for chatting with us on From the Bookshelf. The new book is called Yeah, 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 The Beatles, Beatlemania, and the Music That Changed the World.
Always a pleasure, Gary. Thanks.
Hey, thanks for listening to From the Bookshelf this week. I'll return again next week with another great program. Until then, you can check out our podcast page at kusp.org. From the Bookshelf would not be possible without the hard work of our staff, Miss Breanne Beal. For KUSP, I'm Gary Shapiro. Good night, everybody.